Johan Gamble, Devon, Alstern, Spindlitz, Kraskrenbon, Friedrichedanke, Dummelbart, Steinbon, Nextrescher, Applebanger, Horowitz, Tickelensick, Grandes Hotspelten, Grandes Gundelnaas, Feltewasser, Kürzlich, Imbel, Eisenbahnwagen, Guten Abend, bitte, eine Nürnberger Bratwürstel, Bisbert mit 2 Mark, Grube, Hundfurt, Gumbereibe, Schonendanke, Kalbsfleisch, Mittelreife, von Hartkopf, auf Ulm. Johan Gamble. Grandes Grundelnaas, Feltewasser, Kürzlich, Spindel, Eisenbahnwagen, Guten Abend, bitte, eine Nürnberger Bratwürstel, Gespürt mit 2 Mark, Grube, Hundfurt, Grumbereibe, Schonendanke, Kalbsfleisch, Mittelreife, von Hartkopf, auf Ulm.
Greetings and welcome to On the Brink Radio. This is Jeff Phillips Wefferson coming here from Matapuri, New Zealand. Just trying to mimic or imitate the locust or cicada there up in the tree. With limited success, but hope you enjoyed it. This is On the Brink Radio, broadcast number 313. It's called Schmetterlings, Weltanschauung, and My German Connection. I'm recording this from beautiful Matapuri here. You can hear the little kotari and the cicada in the background, maybe the splashing of some ocean waves. I'm truly on the brink in more ways than one, and it's all going to be good, but I'm having a kind of a Sultans of Swing moment, kind of like, because you'd think, if I told you the whole situation, you'd think I was in dire straits. And I know everything's going to work out all right, but my bureaucratic and financial things have been kind of pushed to the limit here. But it's, the tide is turning, and I think it's all going to be really, really cool. Whenever there's an extreme situation of uncertainty, it creates an equally powerful opportunity for miraculous coolness to happen. So it's all going to be good. I'm a bit behind on my emails and blog posts for my radio shows because I've just been so flat out and on the road down in Christchurch week before last, and then up here in Matapuri for the past week. And I haven't really covered in emails my last two shows, broadcast number 311, about the resilience of life and the ability of life to heal and regenerate when we remove the causes of disease and illness, both at the personal, ecological, and planetary levels. And then broadcast number 312 from last week, honoring my guardian angels and the amazing New Zealand adventure I've been on, and my amazing Australian adventure a few months ago. And today's show is in honor of not only my own German ancestry, but the contributions of the German people to modern culture. Some really cool German friends of mine and people I've met, and some interesting words from the German language. And then my take on my own personal version of that most, to me, unique and important German word, Weltanschauung. But anyway, my mom's family came from Germany to the USA in 1792, after America had only been a new country for less than 20 years. So I don't know any more about them than that. I don't know what part of Germany they came from. I do know that they were farmers and they came to North Carolina. And my granddad, well, I guess it was How many generations would that be? Several generations of my mom's family would have lived in North Carolina. That's about all I know about my mom's family, except that they gave rise to me. So I've always felt a kinship with Germany. I got to visit there in 2008 for the first and only time. My partner at the time, Elisabeth Verstraeten, was from Belgium, and we went and stayed with her dad in Leuven, and we made a trip over into Germany to go and visit some of the architectural sites by Friedrich Hundertwasser, an Austrian artist and architect who actually lived not that far from where I am right here in New Zealand, up at Kalakaua, about 70 kilometers to the north of Whangarei. And actually, interestingly, yesterday in Whangarei, I saw the site of this new art museum that they're building based on a design from Hundertwasser. So that was quite cool. Now that he's been dead for 20 years, they're finally realizing how great of a truly artistic and ecological visionary thinker that he was. I was going to go and try to meet him the very week that I arrived here in February of 2000, but he died that week because he was visiting Australia for the first time on a cruise ship and died of a heart attack. But I'm always talking about how, I mean, my knowledge of German history and culture is very limited, but it's just like, you know, names that I've learned and things from my various aspects of education throughout my life. But I've always complimented people from Germany that I've met on how I think that the German people, the German culture has produced so many of the very highest caliber of people that made intellectual, scientific, and creative contributions, like poets, philosophers, composers, scientists, psychologists. You've got, I'll just run through some names. They're not in any sort of order. You've got a dude named Johann Goethe, G-O-E-T-H-E, who was a very kind of a Leonardo da Vincian kind of mentality, that was a poet. But he also did a lot of the earliest works in developing a theory of optics and color perception. And apparently one of his mentors was a guy named Herd, H-E-R-D-E, who I just learned about. I haven't really learned too much about him. You've got, I believe, Johannes Kepler, the astronomer, was German. You've got Leibniz, the mathematician. You've got Wittgenstein, the linguist. You've got the origins of modern psychology and psychoanalysis with Sigmund Freud and his student Carl Jung. You've got the composers, which is probably what the German culture is most highly renowned for. Bach, Johann Sebastian Bach, Amadeus Mozart, and Ludwig von Beethoven, just to name three. You've also got the amazing visual artist, M.C. Escher, and you've got the famous mathematician, Gödel. There was a really interesting book called Gödel, Escher, and Bach that I used to have a copy of that was very, very interesting. Now, Monty Python came up with some really cool stuff, and to me, one of their funniest things was the little skit that has the guy interviewing the son of the greatest name in German Baroque music, and I can't say the entire name myself, but I know part of it. Johann Gabelputty, Frey Dickedingle Dangle Dungle Dungle Horowitz von Nacker Thrasher Tickelinsick Guter Abendbietedein Unter Bratwurst Gersputen of Ulm. Now I know what Ulm was. Ulm is the little town, that's U-L-M, where Albert Einstein was born. And Lisbeth and I visited there. Now all that's left is a giant shopping mall, a sort of a paved area. There's a tiny little plaque on a pedestal that shows where his house was. And he only lived there till he was two, and then they moved to Berlin, I think. But down the plaza is the cathedral with the tallest spire in Europe. So an Einstein, which is how they actually pronounce it, it actually, in German, it means one rock, one stone. So that's very interesting. I've learned how to say something in German. Ich hab viel Stein bemalt. I'm not really saying it that accurately, but it means I have painted a lot of rocks. So that's quite cool. But so anyway, I've always run into a lot of German people in my travels. And I probably could name, if I really tried, maybe several dozen, if not even 100 German people I've known over the 20 years I've been traveling down under. But recently I've had a very high concentration of running into German people. There was this guy named Rudolph that I just house sat for in Nelson. And he was very German. He was a kind of an ancestral refugee from the Nazis, because his dad was a Nazi officer. And he said he professed to hate his dad, but he dwelt on it a lot. You could tell he's carrying around a lot of that energy. And so that's kind of like the dark side of what people think of from Germany, that Hitler and the Third Reich and all that stuff, which was kind of like one of the most, I don't know if you'd say it was the most brutal dictatorial regime, but it was certainly the most scientifically adept at doing all that kind of stuff, until it all got sort of transferred over to America and taken to the next level technologically, but also with Orwellian PR spent on it all to frame doing all the same stuff the Nazis did, only worse, only making it look like that it's actually doing something good by how it's shown, how it's represented, how it's named. And just for example, after World War II, the Department of War then became the Department of Defense. You know, and Hitler's Ministry of Propaganda and Brainwashing was actually called the Ministry of Enlightenment. You know, so it's all very, very interesting. But I'm not dwelling on the Third Reich and Hitler and all that stuff. I think we all know about that all too well. So I'm focusing on the positive cultural contributions to human thought and creativity. But I've met some really nice German people, and especially lately, Rudolph, who I house sat for in Nelson for a month, Wolfgang Kempf, a classic German name. He was this really cool guy who was bicycling. He had just, I was staying on the Great Ocean Road in Victoria a few months ago, and he came and stayed there for a night. And he had just bicycled the Great Ocean Road, and had just come previously from doing about 1,000 Ks on a mountain bike trail south of Perth. Then he bicycled to Melbourne. He went down to Tasmania and bicycled around there for 2 or 3 weeks. Then he bicycled from Melbourne up to Sydney and north of Sydney along the coastal route, which is quite long and beautiful, that most people never travel. And he managed to do all that and get to New Zealand just before the major fires hit in December. Then he went and cycled around the South Island for 2 or 3 weeks, where I saw him in Nelson. He came through. And then now he's back in Germany teaching school. But his favorite place to bicycle around is Iceland. He said he's gone around there 4 times. And he showed me some pictures that looks like, it's very much like sort of like a volcanic desert landscape, the main parts that he showed me, with the occasional sort of volcanic plug like mountain sticking up. So that was very inspiring to me, him, and I'd really like to, considering taking up some long distance bicycling myself. But yesterday, and part of what's inspiring this show is this really beautiful girl named Selena, who I actually got to meet her in person yesterday for the first time. But we had been in touch for several months, because last year when I was in Australia, I got a message from my friend who's from Whangarei here, And she and her German husband live on their sailboat, travel around the world. And my friend asked me if I could get in touch with her, possibly go and check up on Selena, because she was having some issues up in the northern part of the Western Australia, where she was, or Kununurra. Well, I'm not sure, if I can't remember if that's the territory or Western Australia. So anyway, I got in touch with her and was on the verge of actually traveling all the way up there to help her out. But things kind of stabilized, and we've kept in touch. And then she decided to go back to Germany and to go back to school, back to college, and she's getting degrees in geography and teaching German. But yesterday, and she's come to New Zealand to see her aunt and uncle, and then tomorrow she's flying to Samoa to go and do work with regenerating coral reefs for a month, then back to New Zealand for a month, and then back to Germany to go back to school. And she's rock climbing today. But anyway, yesterday we got to hang out for quite a few hours, and it was just really, really extraordinarily lovely. She's just a beautiful, beautiful person with a beautiful, nice energy and a lovely heart. And she played my flute. She was actually quite good. And but she was a bit of Germany, like a beautiful German flower that I got to experience her beauty for a few hours. And so that was really cool. But to me, the coolest thing about Germany is the language. And I still, even people from Germany have never been able to tell me why. As far as I know, German's the only language I know of that capitalizes every noun when you're writing. Not proper names, every noun. And so I don't know any other language that does that, or even why they do it, and no one's ever been able to tell me. But anyway, the German language, it's quite, you know, I've never studied it. I've just picked up a few words here and there and stuff like that, but it's kind of authoritarian sounding. Kind of, it's easy for German to sound stern. And, but all kind of really cool birds out here. I'm sitting outside. To me, the loveliest German word I know is, of course, Schmetterling. That's S-C-H-M-E-T-T-E-R-L-I-N-G, Schmetterling. It means a butterfly. And so Schmetter also means if you splatter something, like if you swat a fly, you've schmettered it, or something like that. So I really don't understand the connection between why they call Schmetterlings that. But anyway, that's one of my favorite German words, and it's quite beautiful and quite unique. It's very different from butterfly, or en espanol, mariposa, en français, papillon. In Dutch, it's vlinder. There's another interesting German word. It's Fledermaus. F-L-A-D-E-R-M-A-U-S. That means a bat, but it sounds like a flying mouse. So that's pretty cool. Then you've got the German word Umwelt. U-M-W-E-L-T. That means the world. Umwelt. Then you've got the word Gegenschein. Now, this is one most people from Germany don't even know. It's G-E-G-E-N-S-C-H-E-I-N. The Gegenschein is similar to the zodiacal light. It's kind of a band or an arc of light that you can see in the night sky that's kind of has to do with the way that the sun's light reflects off of clouds of meteoric dust in various sort of orbital patterns around the Earth and the heliocosm. That's quite cool. Then you've got the legendary physicist, the relativity guy, Albert Einstein, or Einstein, as they say. And that his name actually literally means one rock. Albert One Rock. And I already said, Ich habe viel Stein bemalt. I've painted a lot of rocks. So I also thought it was very interesting that German has an expression for deriving pleasure from seeing something bad happen to somebody. And I don't know if it necessarily means if somebody spills something on themselves, or if they trip and fall and hurt themselves, or if they get hit by a car, or a meteor crashes on their head and they're exploded. I'm not sure what level of pleasure of and what level of pain or injury that this has a connotation of, but Schadenfreude, they've got an expression for that, but they don't have an expression for deriving pleasure from seeing good things happening to people. And I always thought that was quite asymmetrical and maybe indicative of sort of the German persona in general. I asked my friends from Germany who I met at Rainbow Valley last year, they came up with the word Wohlwollen, W-O-H-W-O-L-L-E-N, as kind of like the antithesis of Schadenfreude, but it's not exactly the same. But I think Wohlwollen means just, you know, it means like good energy. But so I don't know if Schadenfreude, yesterday in talking with my friends, I go like, well, in English we've got sadistic means that you enjoy. Well, to me, sadistic means not getting pleasure from seeing bad things happen, but from actually doing it. So sadistic means someone who inflicts pain or injury on other people and then enjoys it. But then also might enjoy seeing somebody do something bad to somebody else. So it's kind of related. Then you've got masochism, which means, as I understand it, people that enjoy hurting themselves, or they like pain. And this might be either mental, spiritual, emotional, or physical. You know, and so that's an interesting expression. The expression misery loves company could be related to that somehow. But the word that I really wanted to talk about, other than some of the funny sounding German words that I've made up, like some of them are names, some of them are kind of naughty sounding, some of them might make sense. Like, for example, I made up a name for someone from Germany. Now, this is somebody that you might want to meet. Jan Hunting Gerfleudel Schneuzen. And I have no idea what any of those words mean, except for Schneuz has something to do with your nose. So he's got a Gerfleudel Schneuzen. And then another one I made up is Kleptenscheiß. That's Kleptenscheisse. That one means somebody who steals shit. The Kleptenscheiß. Scheiße. But and then you've got the greatest name in German Baroque music that I tried to pronounce before. Johann Gabelputty, Fried, Dickadingle, Dangle, Dungle, Dungle, Horowitz, Von Naka, Thrasher, Tickelinzig, Guter, Abendbietedein unter Bratwurst Gersputen of Ulm. But, okay, now we're getting to what this show's really all about. The Weltanschauung. That's Weltanschauung. Weltanschauung. And Welt has to do with world. And I'm not sure about what all the other syllables mean. But the Weltanschauung means your worldview, your sort of like your big picture perspective on life, the universe, and everything. And as I understand it, Christopher Simpson, in a really interesting book called The Science of Coercion, told about the word Weltanschauungskrieg. That's Weltanschauung with a S-K-R-I-E-G on the end, which means war. War or warfare. So worldview warfare came to be known as psychological warfare, as adopted by the American intelligence community. So, Weltanschauung, I think I might have first come across that word, or maybe Umwelt, in an anthropology course in college, looking at the way that different cultures perceive reality. the relativity of cultural perception, and a lot of that has to do with the language that you speak. So I think that we're living in a world where we have been experiencing the Weltanschauungskrieg ever since World War II. And the powers that be have been utilizing what Christopher Simpson called mental genetics to try to engineer our own worldview to be consonant or in harmony with the worldview that they want us to have. And so I think it's an extremely important concept in terms of being aware of and defining and understanding and conscious of your own worldview and what the most salient and important aspects of that are. And these would be, to me, functionally speaking, it's not just this or that belief or fact or statement or idea or ideology that you identify with or hold to be true. Your worldview, for a lot of people, could probably be more accurately described by somebody that knows you than by the person themselves, because a lot of people have never really become that aware or conscious of what their most fundamental beliefs are. So, like, for example, in a capitalistic society, one of the most fundamental beliefs has to do with the reality and the significance, the centrality of this thing called money, which is a sort of an operating environment invented by bankers hundreds of years ago as overtly as a way to facilitate trade and to create a system of valuation of that sort of quantifies an medium of exchange as opposed to just like trading or bartering. But ultimately, it's built in, it's heavily weighted in favor of the people that control the system, like to a very high degree. And at some levels it works, but at larger levels it's this very abstract system with kind of a life of its own. And I've even likened capitalism to being like a true world religion, in the sense that it's got all the salient characteristics of a religion, the belief in a God and the ability to motivate or drive people to do stuff in the name of that God that they would otherwise never conceive of doing because of its heinosity or its diabolicity. People will do stuff for money or for God as if it's not the same thing, that they would otherwise never do. So, but that's kind of like a central pillar in the worldview of a lot of people. I mean, and it's something you've got to deal with, but it doesn't have to be the dominant characteristic. To me, in my worldview, the most dominant aspect is my awareness of my relationship with Mother Earth, Mother Nature, and all my family of life, all my fellow beings of all the different kingdoms of life who share being here now with us, and who I think that it's our true responsibility and our purpose as human beings in terms of who we were really supposed to be. We're supposed to honor and nurture and care for our family of life. We're not supposed to desecrate them and enslave them and exploit them and engineer them and extract their resources and destroy their habitats and poison and kill and murder, mutilate them. We're not supposed to be doing all that, but yet all of that kind of defines the basic modus operandi of human civilization in the world of today. So your Weltanschauung, it's what you say you believe and hold to be true, but it's also what you actually do. Which you may or may not be all that aware of, but the fruits of your actions would be the effect. Your Weltanschauung would be the operating system that enables you to do all the stuff that you do with your life, how you spend your time, how you spend your energy, what's important to you, what's not. And also another huge factor in the Weltanschauung of anyone today is the influence of mass communication and mass media. It used to be in a sort of pre-technological ways of living that nature and our mind was closer to being identical than it is now, because we have so much of our reality, so much of our worldview is influenced by or even consists of the feedback of second order information that's created by someone else and delivered to us by technologies outside of our body about stuff that may or may not have anything to do with our own immediate life. Like, just as a very salient example right happening in the world of today, that I've actually kept it off the windscreen of my mind almost successfully as I did anything about Donald Trump leading up to the election a few years ago, about the what they're calling the coronavirus thing. And I haven't really been able to even take it seriously. It's so stupid. It's like anything that's got that degree of mass media firepower behind it can't be real. I mean, it's more of a media artifact, a form of psychological terrorism, a false flag thing, than it would be. I mean, the media just doesn't report on stuff that's real to that degree. It's all got to be, anything that's chosen to be reported on is going to be manipulated, engineered, amplified, and presented in such a way as to try to convince or persuade people to believe this or that. In this case, it may be, you know, the agenda is multiple, like with everything else. I'm sure that there's a degree of reality to it, but I think that it's astronomically over-exaggerated. So it's definitely affected the economy of China, which is in turn affecting the economy of a lot of other countries and stuff. It's affected the tourism in Australia from China. It's causing a lot of fear and panic in a lot of people, but also I have to compliment most of the friends that I've been in touch with lately aren't really even taking it seriously, because they just laugh and they go like, but look, oh, are we going to run to the grocery store and buy a bunch of food? And are we going to buy the test kit or try to buy some of the special vaccine for it? And I go like, but look, if you actually look at the statistics, there's this a common disease called influenza that every year, as I understand it, influenza kills probably hundreds of thousands of people in America alone and infects millions, and a lot of people have to be hospitalized, and this is something that happens every year, whereas the coronavirus thing is affecting an astronomically lower number of people than this, and not that many people are dying, but yet its fans are being flamed up into this like global pandemic where the flu's not ever even mentioned unless you go looking for it. Did you see a thing last year about how, influenza epidemic kills 800,000 people in America? No, it's not popularized. So people are all too willing to allow their own Weltanschauung to be spoon-fed into them by the powers that be using really advanced technologies, especially television. So to have a grip and to be constantly creating and navigating your own Weltanschauung is of critical importance, because your Weltanschauung is like your world map. It's your map of who you are and what you're doing and what you want to do and where you're going and what's important to you. It would be a very interesting exercise if everybody sat down and drew out a chart of their own worldview, like what your most cherished and fundamental beliefs are, ones that are unquestioned. You know, like a lot of this would also revolve around instinctive biological things like your family, you know, your children or your spouse or your mom and dad, the people in your immediate family. This would be a very central part of your worldview. And then also in Western society, probably the next biggest thing down would be what you eat, your diet, your food, that your taka, that you've got to get into your body, you know, and then where you live and how are you going to get around. I mean, these are sort of like the basic fundamental physical and mechanical necessities of life, but they take a lot of time and energy, and therefore constitute a very significant part of your worldview. But the part I'm trying to get at is the more overarching metaprogrammatic aspects of the beliefs that you hold that sort of give meaning to your life, that define why you do what you do, what your goals and hopes and dreams and aspirations are, what you think is most important. And to me, in my worldview, I'm probably guilty of not looking out for myself enough and spending a lot of time and energy giving away my art and trying to be of service to life beyond just my own self in every possible way, because it just seems like that's why we're here. And if everybody tried to be of greater service to life, if everybody tried to be more of a crew member of Spaceship Earth rather than just a passenger, things could be a lot better. So that kind of sums up the idea of what your worldview is. But I think there's no time like the present to evaluate and assess the key components of your own personal worldview, because this is kind of like your own personal reality. And to ask yourself if there's any aspects of your existing worldview that could possibly stand to be revised, to be expanded, to be increased the resolution. To me, it's an unending onward journey to try to constantly refine the resolution of your big picture. And that's what a big part of everything that I do is with my art, writing, music, and creativity, my networking and constant self-education, and trying to share all the valid, relevant information I can about stuff that really matters. To me, sharing and communication of valid information is a critical aspect of my own worldview, and to try to be of service to all of life and to my fellow man, my fellow beings on Mother Earth, and to give thanks for the beauty and power of being here now, and to use all the amazing abilities that I and that we all have, that because we don't ask enough of ourselves. We're content just to sit back and take it easy and do as little as possible. But if you actually push yourself to use the abilities and opportunities that you have, the world could be a much better place. This is Jeff Phillips Wefferson signing off for On the Brink Radio. May the Schmetterlings of the Gegenschein shine upon your Fledermaus and your Weltanschauung. Good day.
Beethoven, Mozart, Chopin, Liszt, Brahms, Panties. I'm sorry. Schumann, Schubert, Mendelssohn, and Bach. Names that will live forever. But there is one composer whose name is never included with the greats. Why is it the world never remembered the name of Johann Gambleputte? De Bonn, Ausfern, Spindenschliff, Kresskrenbon, Friedige Dangle Dungle, Barstein, Bonn, Neckthresher, Applebanger, Horowitz, Tickelensick, Grander Nodges, Beltickel, Grandisch, Grunwaldmeier, Speltewasser, Kirstlich, Imbel, Eisenbahnwagen, Guten Abendbitter, Einen Nürnberger, Bratwürstel, Gespürt mit zwei Marke, Lube, Hunsfurt, Gumberabe, Schonendanke, Kalbsfleisch, Mittelracker, von Hartkopf, auf Ulm. To do justice to this man, thought by many to be the greatest name in German Baroque music, we present a profile of Johann Gambleputte. Devon, Ausfirm, Spendenschlitt, Kastrum, Kastrum, Gumbel, Barstein, von Neckfresh, Applebanger, Horowitz, Tickelensick, Grandenot, Speltingel, Grandisch, Grunwaldmeier, Speltewasser, Kirschet, Imbel, Eisenbahnwagen, Guten Abend, bitte, einen Nürnberger, Bratwürstel, Zwölfen, Zweimarken, Lübe, Hunsfurt, Gumberabe, Schonendanke, Kalbsfleisch, Mittelracker, von Hartkopf, auf Ulm. We start with an interview with his only surviving relative, Karl Gambleputte.
When he was with his wife, Sarah Gambleputte.
Yes, if I may cut in on you there, Herr Gambleputte, de von Hausfern, Spreden, Schlittkast, Kinderbahn, Burstein, von Lachenfrasche, Applebanger, Tickelensick, Grandenotti, Speltinkel, Grandlich, Grumbelmaar, Speltewasser, Kurslich, Himmel, Eisenbahn, Wagen, Guten Abend, Bitte, Ein, Nürnberger, Bratwurst, Gespürt, mit Zwiemach, Lube, Hunsfurt, Gumbe, Aber, Schönen, Danke, Karl, Fleisch, Mittelwaffe, von Abkopf, Verwulm. And ask you just quickly, any particular thing that you remember about Johann Gambleputte?
Foot gumball, aber schön, danke, Kalbfleisch, Mittelrache, von Halt, Kalb,